a lot.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus, and I am here with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who, as I always say, on a day-to-day basis, is also a professor at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. It's actually day-to-day for both of us, so that's just kind of the way it works. And this is a constitution today, and everything else we want to talk about. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeffrey. What's up? I guess we're very blessed to be in a part of the world that's not on fire right now. So, things are looking up, man.
Well, you may be in a part of the world that's not on fire, but first of all, before we even get into that, hi, Hez, how you doing today?
How you doing? I'm doing good. It's good to hear you guys on the air this week as opposed to last week.
Yeah, it's all right.
Why,
you didn't like us
last week?
Well, I loved you last week, except that we couldn't talk. That was the problem.
It
was a problem. I was on vacation, but I'm getting to that. Okay.
All right.
It may not be it. Well, the country may not be, the world may not be on fire. We may be in a part of the country where there are no flames.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, you are talking to a man on fire. Okay.
Yeah.
And I can't help it. We're going to start it out this way. As all of you know, I was supposed to be on a two-week vacation that was supposed to have ended yesterday. Okay, this is the 2 weeks that I spend up in the mountains of North Carolina. It takes me about a week to kind of unwind, and then I get this 1 week of absolute bliss. Okay, and unfortunately, I never got to the second week, and the first week certainly didn't do anything to help me. Suffice it to say that I have to kind of go through this. The problems, I rent a house, and the person I rented the house from this year, let's just put it this way, was not what I would say one of the more honest people I've ever done this with. And it started when Marilyn and I arrived there on the day we were supposed to be there, and it was raining. I mean, it was raining. And we went up to the door and put in the code, and the door didn't open. And for the next 45 minutes, we sat in a car in the rain, sending text messages, making phone calls. We even tried to get a hold of them on Facebook. Okay, and eventually, after about 45 minutes, he called back, and he was all apologetic. And he said, I don't understand why the code didn't work. I was there this weekend. I changed it, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Okay, I said, I don't care. Give me a code so I can get in the house. Okay. So we get in the house, and the first thing we find out is that the electrical wiring in this place is really awful. You can only hit switches which are labeled, which, of course, we had hit other switches, and those other switches affect the ability of the ones that are labeled to work. The house electrically is a disaster. It rains the first 3 days we're there. My son shows up. There's literally, it rains the first 3 days. And we hung, we tried to get the birds to come because I love the birds. And they wouldn't come in the rain. They hid up in the tree. Mm-hmm. And the deer are hiding in the tree. And, it's just not much fun. Finally, the rain stopped. I started, at least kind of stopped, and I played around the golf, mostly in the rain. And my son left on Thursday. And, we had a nice time. Meryl and I start to enjoy a couple of days. And on Monday morning, my beloved walks out of the bedroom that she's sleeping in, and she is covered with bug bites.
Oh, my.
I mean, just covered with them. And they're bed bug bites. And I called the guy, and the guy says, well, I was there last weekend. Nobody got bit. And it really probably is more likely fleas because you got too close to the deer. And I said, we haven't gotten within 400 yards of the deer. So that's not it. He says, well, you must have, basically intimating that we brought the bugs, not knowing how bed bugs actually work. And He says, I'll have a guy out there in a couple of days. I said, a couple of days. You want me to live in a house of dead bugs for a couple of days? That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my own exterminator, and he says, you got bed bugs, and here's the report. Nope. The next 4 days were nothing but aggravation with this guy. We left. He doesn't want to give us money back. Still blaming us. Finally, he admits there are bed bugs in there, but it's our fault. All kinds of stuff. Okay? So I finally just said, that's fine. You want litigation, you got litigation. He says, I got a lawyer, too. So I looked up his lawyer. His lawyer is a real estate and land management lawyer. I don't think she wants litigation. They don't litigate. So I'm in litigation with this guy. And so the second week, which is supposed to be my go-to-Nirvana week,
mm-hmm.
was my living in the depths of hell week. We went off and tried to enjoy ourselves at Jekyll Island, and things were starting. It rained most of the time we were there, but we did some stuff and had a nice time doing it and saw a couple of our friends. And the last day was kind of a very nice day. We really had a good time, despite the fact that she was still suffering from her bed bug bites and had to go to an emergency care and all kinds of stuff. In the middle of the last night, I hear things getting knocked over in the middle of the night, and I hear her voice, and it's urgent. And I turn on the light, and she says, there's something in my bed.
Oh my
and
God.
We pull back the covers, and there's a cockroach.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Okay, I'm sorry, honey. It wasn't my fault. Okay, honestly, I didn't do this to you on purpose. Okay, it was your vacation, too. Okay, so you have my profuse apologies for just how awful this vacation was.
Yeah.
Okay? But, you know, it could not have been a worse end to the vacation for her to have that happen to her.
Yeah.
And I feel awful about it. I really do. I just feel awful about it. Publicly, I apologize to you for the vacation that you had. I promise you a better one. Sometime. Somewhere. Okay?
Yeah.
So, I'm not a happy camper. I'm angry. And I'm going to let you know it all day today. How's that?
Right. Yeah, you
I'm on
to
fire.
Be. Yeah,
I'm on fire. Okay.
Yeah, it's the reverse of a vacation. It's an anti-vacation, right?
Yeah.
You know.
It is the end of days, according to evangelicals.
Yeah. Well. Right. Yeah. Well, they're hastening. They're hastening the end of days as much as they possibly can, right? So.
Can I blame Trump for this since he's the Antichrist?
Yeah, right. right.
Yeah, it's his fault. The bugs are feeling empowered. Okay, pestilence.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. right. I don't know which is worse, bed bugs or cockroaches. But,
I don't know, and I'm not trying to find out either.
Yeah,
you look
yeah.
it up and let me know, okay?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that. That's that really sucks.
yeah, it does.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Right.
What you got going on, man?
Well, and now we're going to talk about what's going on in the world. Your blood pressure is just going to keep going up and up. You have your blood pressure meds with you this morning?
I just took it. I'm okay.
Good. Good. Well, let's start with what you and I talked about earlier this morning, whether a court in Georgia is going to think that Donald Trump is cute with a social media message that he posted. And let me see if I can pull it up here.
Is that the one
I'll,
where
I'll
he
read
thinks
it.
He's going to run away to Russia?
Yeah, yeah. So, right. So I'll read this message that he posted, and we can just kind of launch from there. How about that?
Okay, that sounds good to me.
So this is Trump. Apparently, sometime late yesterday, the failed district attorney of Fulton County, Fonnie Willis, which by the way, let me just interject here. I think we ought to talk about even whether he should even be mentioning her name in a public forum. But okay, I'll continue. Mm-hmm. Bonnie Willis insisted on a $200,000 bond from me. I assume, therefore, that she thought I was a flight risk. I'd fly far away, maybe to Russia, share a gold-domed suite with Vladimir, never to be seen or heard from again. Would I be able to take my very understated airplane with the gold Trump affixed for all to see? Probably not. I'd be much better off flying commercial. I'm sure nobody would recognize me. So in the context of $200,000 bonds, he thought it would be a good idea to chastise by name the prosecutor and to joke around about being a flight risk. And as a former judge yourself, Jeff, I'm gonna cede the floor here. How do you think the court's going to respond? As we talked about, they're going to tread carefully. But was this a good idea? What are you telling Donald Trump if you're one of his lawyers at this point?
Well, I think this is, first of all, I think this was his last shot. I think that he did that because although he had agreed to terms of his bond, he has not executed that agreement.
Mm-hmm.
He won't execute it until he turns himself in tomorrow, or no, day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
And signs the bond itself and makes the deposit. So at this point, I think that there's really little that the court can do because he wasn't under an order. He may have violated the spirit of an agreement that he made, but not the letter of the agreement. And so I don't think there's anything they can do. However, and since he's not going to be in front of a judge until his arraignment, unless the judge hauls him down there for a special meeting, we won't know anything until the arraignment is, in fact, what people call the arrangement is arranged. So I don't think that anything's going to happen as a result of it. Do I think it's, shall we say, not so funny to talk about Funny Willis? Get it? I think that's he's going to call her one of these days, not so funny Willis. No, I don't think it's cute. But I think that the system in Atlanta in particular, in Georgia, has some other flaws, and I'll talk about those in a minute. Do I think he's a flight risk? If anything happens that leads him to believe that he is not going to be the Republican nominee, and we're going to talk about how his numbers, as much as they look strong, are actually softening right now. If he gets to somewhere around Super Tuesday and it looks like he is not going to be wrapping up the nomination and now he's got himself a battle, which would be the best thing in the world for Democrats to see Republicans go to their convention without a nominee and a battle, floor battle. I wouldn't put it past him to leave because he cannot count on a Republican winning to keep him free. And he has never had to go to trial in a criminal trial ever. And as people start dropping from some of these cases because they're now cooperating, he has to understand that the writing is on the wall. And all he has to do is go to Bedminster for a couple of days, find a way to very quietly slip out to the airport nearby, hop on his 757?
Yep.
And head south till he gets to Honduras. And in Honduras, they don't extradite anybody. You can't execute against anybody's property. They won't even serve a friggin' subpoena in Honduras. They are not signatories to the Hague Convention, and they will never get him back. And if he starts sensing that he's going to need money, he will start liquidating things. He will start transferring cash into a Honduran bank account, and he will go down there and live like a king. He'll never be able to leave. But at 78 years old, you know, his attitude may be better better free in this gilded cage than the bars that they want to put me behind in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think he's a flight risk. I think he is legitimately a flight risk. I believe that. He could say I'm going to some campaign event, and then while he's in the air, pilot can change their flight plan to wherever he wants to go. What are they going to do, shoot him down? So he's a flight risk. I'd be concerned about it. That part of it I am concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
The other part I'm not happy about is the fact that they disclose the name of grand jurors.
Right.
By statute, they have to sign the indictment. The only person in every place else I've ever been that has to sign an indictment is the foreperson.
Yeah.
Now, if they don't have to sign, they at least list the names. Under what circumstances, knowing the way things are out there, knowing the way this guy promotes violence, possibly expose your grand jurors to the kind of attacks that they are under right now? Under what circumstances would you do that? It is hard to believe that there was no discretion by this judge to seal their names and to only give their names to members of his defense team. Not even allow them to give it to him. Not disclose it to the press. So they can do a background check if they want to on them or whatever they feel that is important for them to do. And they are the only person who should have those names. I just don't get it. I literally don't get it.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's got me angry. It's just wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Trump's new friend, if he goes to Russia, will probably be Ed Snowden. You're silent like you don't remember who Ed Snowden is.
I remember Ed Snowden. Yeah, but I don't know where he is.
Now,
where is he?
He's in Russia. He's in Russia. He's in Moscow, the last we heard. They shipped him off to Siberia for a while, okay, because he lost his usefulness. But from what I read recently, he's in Moscow. He's got a girlfriend. And all. He's living a nice life.
Yeah.
He's still
good
a
him.
Hero of the Soviet Union. I mean,
right.
So that's his new best friend.
Yeah.
They can hold joint press conferences and talk about how they're being abused by the American government.
Mm-hmm.
How's that sound?
Yeah, he'd have to really fuel up that 757. if he's gonna make a break for Russia.
Not really, because all he has to do is get to Greenland and gas up. He can stop in Iceland on the way.
Right.
He can get there in the 757. That's a longer range aircraft than you know.
Oh yeah, that'd get him all the way. He just has to make sure that they've got enough fuel, and that's gonna be one heavy ass airplane.
Yeah, well, you know, kids will come and pick it up and take it back to the States.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know where he'd go in it. He could fly to Siberia if he wants to and visit, you know, at Snowden or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So be that as it may.
Right.
Okay, but that's where he's going to – but Honduras is absolutely, absolutely reachable in one tank of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's where I'd go if I were him.
Right. Right.
If he starts transferring money to Honduras, the government should immediately believe he's about to run. There's no other reason to send your money there.
Right.
So, there you go.
Yeah.
That's nice, Brendan.
Well, you have to wonder about the psychology of this because, you know, Trump is in full freakout mode, and we talk about this a lot. I think he's delusional enough that he wouldn't allow himself to go here. But, you know, you mentioned his age, you know, he's 77, 78, something like that.
78 years old.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's at a point in his life where, you know, most people would be kind of reflecting on, you know, what's the legacy that I created for myself and my family? You know, how did I live did I live well? Am I living well, and have I lived well? And to find yourself twice impeached and four times indicted, and sued in civil cases, you know, more than most mobsters ever get sued. And to be at a point where you really are, I mean, if he's rational, he's realizing he has very limited choices here. You know, he's either going to get elected president, which is looking less and less likely, or he is going to face multiple years behind bars, or he is going to reach a deal, and we can talk about why that's probably not likely, with prosecutors in multiple jurisdictions to keep himself
right.
out of jail, or he can run. It would be an amazing stressor on any rational human at his age to find yourself in that position where those are the choices. The only winning move for him is to win the presidency of the United
States.
If he cannot do that, it's any person going down.
We're having a hard time hearing you, Brendan.
Oh, yeah? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can
hear you now.
Oh, okay.
That's what happens when you hold the phone with your shoulder while you're doing something else.
I'm not doing anything else. this is far too important. It's actually what happens when you hold your phone to your left ear with your right hand.
That's bad.
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
That was the problem. So I'm now holding
because
it with my left
hand. Because to do that, your arm has to go across your mouth to do that. So that is...
Yeah. And your hand covers up the little speaker thing. So
right.
Here we are. So
Yeah. So I agree with you. I mean, most people would want to think about their legacy and what they've done in their lives. He obviously is concerned that the last thing that's happening to him makes him a loser and he's going to die a loser.
Right.
Well, I hate to tell you something, Donald, but you are a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And all your money doesn't make you a winner. History will not treat you kindly, and deservedly so. They will write books about you, but they will not be complimentary. And in this thought process and involving criminal justice, the old adage that any publicity is good publicity, it's not. You may be raising money from people who are literally ignorant enough to hand you their money, and you may be a good con man, but that is your legacy. Your legacy is you created the greatest con in the history of the United States. You conned your way into being president and turned it into a money-making proposition. That is your legacy while you committed more crimes. And from now on, when we talk about traitors to this country, Benedict Arnold comes in second.
Mm-hmm.
Benedict Arnold was always the standard, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He was the standard. Guess what? Not anymore. Donald Trump and his cohorts are the standard now. And it will be in history. That's his legacy. And when he dies, he's not going to be buried in Arlington. He's not going to lay in state in the Capitol. He's not going to get a state funeral. The few people that will be there will see him planted in the ground in some cemetery in New York, probably where his father, the former Grand Dragon of the New York Ku Klux Klan, is buried. And for some people, it may be a mecca that they must go to. But that will die off, and weeds will grow, and no one will visit. That's your future, Donald. And nothing you can do is going to stop that. You are going to end up like Scrooge was supposed to end up in A Christmas Carol. until he changed. But you're not capable of change. That's what I think. But whatever. I want to read something. Can I read something here? Section 3. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. Now, but Congress may by vote of two-thirds of each house remove such disability. Did you see anything in there about being convicted of a crime? Did you hear me say convicted of insurrection?
No.
Did you hear me say anything about being convicted of a crime in there? It's not there. That is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. And Lawrence Tribe and Judge Luttig, both conservative commentators on the law, have opined, as have many conservative and liberal experts in constitutional law, have said it does not require that he be convicted of a crime or of insurrection. It only requires a Secretary of State of a state to declare that he has in fact participated in insurrection, that his loyalty oath that he will sign is a fraud, and he will not be on the ballot of that state. That's all it's going to take. Excuse my cough. And if it happens in states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, maybe even Ohio, not likely, but possibly, those three states, if their Secretary of State makes that finding, he cannot get to 270.
Yep.
And yes, it can be challenged within their state courts, and it can go to the United States Supreme Court. But if the United States Supreme Court said the states had the power to disqualify anybody they wish from any office, there is a federal question, because it's going to be based on the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. But if they sat there and said, we have no basis to overturn that decision, then he automatically loses. The states that have to make that decision. And he has to go to a state court before he goes to a federal court. But he could find himself disqualified from even running. It doesn't matter what happens in the cases. Obviously, if Smith tries the case in Washington and gets a conviction, other than those ruby red states, those Secretary of State that remain will have to disqualify him. Whether the word insurrection is in that indictment or not, because there was an armed attack on the United States Congress. That's an insurrection. I'm sorry. Whether you use that word or not, that is an armed insurrection against the United States government, and he was part of it in the context that he gave them aid and comfort. He gave them incentive to do it. Jefferson Davis did not fight in the insurrection of the 1860s, and I stopped calling it a civil war. But he headed up the supposed government that fought that war, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he was guilty of insurrection against the United States. Donald Trump is disqualified as of this very moment, is not qualified to be president of the United States. And it just is going to take one, two, or three states to make that determination. And when they do, there will be a snowball effect in every blue state. He won't have a hope of getting to 270. And Congress would have to make a two-thirds vote to overturn that. Good luck. You can't get 50% to do something. Get two-thirds to overturn that decision. It's not going to happen. You can't count on Congress. He's disqualified. Tribe and Lubick are right. They're 100% correct. What you got to say about that, Mr. Commonwealth Professor?
Certainly. If you're a textualist, right, there's not much that's ambiguous about that. And as you say, there's no requirement there of any conviction, even though there could be one. So the only question for me is, who's got the nerve to do it? Purdue was on the other foot.
I think the Michigan Secretary of State has that nerve.
Yeah.
I think the Pennsylvania Secretary of State has that nerve.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a number of states where the Secretary of State would have the nerve to do it and say he's disqualified. I've made that decision. That's my power. And I think it could very well happen. But you know it's going to happen if he gets convicted in Washington. You know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The judge doesn't, but if there is a court that has made a determination that he was part of the insurrection and it's clear that the attack of January 6th is part of that indictment, that what he did and his attempt to overthrow the government was multifaceted, like they said in the committee, and that at that point, that jury is making the decision that he, in fact, conspired to overturn the United States government, and that's an insurrection, armed or otherwise, and as a result of which, I don't think that any Secretary of State has a choice but to say your loyalty oath is worthless. You signed one before. It doesn't require a court. But if there is a decision and there is a judgment of guilty on offenses which can be interpreted as being part of an insurrection, he's disqualified. And Republicans are never going to get a two-thirds vote. We know that. He's gone. And that's why it's so important that that case in particular be tried before the Republican National Convention. So they can go into that convention completely ripped apart with 10 or 12 or 14 people trying to become the nominee and ballot after ballot after ballot of division. Good luck getting elected. All you have to do is think back to what happened to Hillary Clinton with Bernie or Hubert Humphrey when he got the nomination in 68. The House divided cannot stand.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party cannot stand divided.
Yeah. Or Jimmy Carter after Edward Kennedy came after him.
That's right. He had no hope of getting elected.
Yeah.
There was just no hope. So, or even LBJ after McCarthy filed against him. Okay?
Right.
It's just the way politics work. Gerry Ford, after Reagan went after him.
Right, yeah.
Just think about it. It just isn't there. So, you know, look at Obama, the division that took place in the Republican Party. First getting to the point of nominating McCain, and then he nominates Palin and divides them even more.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the danger that Trump This is the danger that Trump presents to the Republican Party, and they refuse to recognize it. Speaking of which, I still think the trial date for the Washington case will be at the end of January, the beginning of February, building in a possibility of a delay for a month and a half into the middle of March.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that case starting later than the middle of March,
yeah.
Which means it will be over by Super Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And off to the convention they go with a convicted candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Who's now going to be disqualified from running by a number of secretaries of state. Oh, to be a fly on the wall at that convention after experiencing what happened in 1968. So what else we got done?
Well, let me ask you this. If you are the Secretary of State of Michigan, what do you do timing-wise? Do you start making the findings now and do it as soon as possible to let Republicans know that if they vote for him, he won't be on the he won't be eligible to run in that state? Or do you wait for a conviction, or do you wait until he actually wins the nomination and then do it?
No, actually, here's the problem. She has no standing to do anything until he qualifies or attempts to qualify as a candidate in Michigan.
Right.
Now, there is a primary in Michigan, from what I understand. I believe it's a presidential primary. And so when he files his papers to run, become a candidate for president of the United States, he has to file, every state requires a loyalty oath. The minute he files that, that's when she has standing to make a determination that Donald Trump has not qualified for president of the United States because he cannot qualify for president of the United States under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's where her standing is. That's when she has the ability to do it. And I think she's bound to do it. She cannot set a honey trap where he qualifies,
right,
gets the nomination, and then she says, now you can't be on the ballot.
Right.
When he's on the ballot for a primary, he's on the ballot to become president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she has to act at that point.
Yeah.
And I think she will. How do you like that? How do you like that?
That's a good way to put it. That's what, and I agree. I don't think they can set a honey trap. They're going to have to do it in a timely way, as soon as they are authorized to do it. I agree with that. Let's talk about who is going to be the nominee. You're looking at Chris Christie tomorrow night to be the person making waves. What do you think?
I am. I think that Chris Christie is so talented at debating. He is such a bulldog. Okay, he is a bulldog and he is a bully. Okay, and he doesn't try to hide it. The fact that he goes after Donald the way he does says, I can bully Donald Trump, and I did bully Donald Trump into not coming to Iowa. I am responsible for Donald Trump not being here. He's taking credit for that. He's afraid of me, and he has bullied Donald Trump. People aren't saying that, but that's what happened. If Chris Christie wasn't there, Donald thinks he can handle everybody else there because no one's going to attack him. So he shows up. Well, when Chris Christie qualified, that was it. He wasn't coming, and he won't come to the next one. As long as Chris Christie is on, he will not show up because he can't handle it. So he bullied him away. I think that Chris Christie is going to have a phenomenal night tonight. He's going after everybody, and everybody is vulnerable to him. He may not go after Asa Hutchinson because Asa Hutchinson is so mealy-mouthed, and so weak in the way that he talks. It may be, but he just doesn't sound good. He doesn't sound convincing. So he's not worried about Asa Hutchinson. And he's not worried about Bascom or whatever his name is from North Dakota, who had to buy his way in by telling him, if you give me a dollar, I'll give you a $20 gift certificate. Okay?
Right, right.
Okay. There's something wrong with that thought process. I don't know. Okay, that's you know, literally he bought his way in. I just don't think he's worried about anybody else up there. He's not worried about Scott. He's going to go after Ramaswamy. He's going to go after DeSantis. He's going to emulsify DeSantis. I think DeSantis will be out before South Carolina. And right now, DeSantis is behind Christie in New Hampshire. DeSantis will be gone by the time South Carolina is over. And that scares me as a person who lives in Florida. I'd rather he was never here. Okay? So Christie's just going to go after them all. He's not going to hold back. He understands this is his moment to break out. He is going to dominate tonight. Absolutely dominate. I truly believe that. I just don't see anybody else capable of breaking out tonight.
No.
He's it. Nikki Haley is not going to break out. Tim Scott is not going to break out. I just don't see anybody there. And Chris Christie does scare me to a certain extent because he's, quote, a moderate Republican, close quote. But the killer for him and the deciding factor for him, his kryptonite, is his stance on pro-choice.
Right.
That he is pro-life, and unabashedly so. And that will cost him in a general election. But I'm going to say this. Marilyn, are you listening? Joe Biden shouldn't debate anybody, ever. He is a competent president. He is more than competent. He has done amazing things as president of the United States. His accomplishments are innumerable, but he's not a debater. As you put it to me, Brendan, he could debate Trump because all he has to do is say, are you hearing anything new? This is the guy you threw out in 2020 for me. Are you hearing anything new? Or as we say from New York, new? So, but the rest of them, he should never get up on a stage. He should use his surrogates around the country to say, look what this guy has done for you. Look, the old adage, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And if the answer is yes, why are you changing? So I think tonight belongs to Chris Christie. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Could be wrong. It's been known to happen occasionally, but.
You know, you hear a lot of commentary that, there's plenty to hold back Ron DeSantis, but the number one thing holding him back is his own personality. I found it really interesting that he must be the world's worst actor because, he's certainly been told at this point, you know, you have to, if you don't have, you know, any empathy or compassion or human emotions or joy,
personality.
Yeah. Any of that, you know, in your person, in your soul, at least freaking pretend.
Fake it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, smile at a child, you know, he can't do it. If he smiled, his face would crack. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Churchill, people said Churchill looked like a bulldog, right? Mm-hmm. He looked like, that's why he had a bulldog.
Right.
People like dogs that look like them. Okay? You look like a German Shepherd. So therefore you have
I was going to say, Lainey's very pretty. I'll go along with that. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
But I guess the thing that I could say is that DeSantis looks like a pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try to train a pit bull, but you can't take the DNA out of a pit bull.
Right.
You can train it to a certain extent, but there's always a trigger. They all have a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
This guy walks around, and everything's a trigger to him.
Yeah.
He doesn't like anything. His life must be absolutely miserable.
Mm-hmm.
He claims to love his wife, but she pushes him around and tells him what to do.
Mm-hmm.
He may love his kids, I guess. It's hard to imagine that he wouldn't. Even a pit bull likes their puppies.
Right.
But this guy doesn't like anything or anybody. And nobody likes him.
Right.
When he was in Congress, he had no friends. He doesn't have friends. You can't fake it that you're mm-hmm. going to be friendly to people when you don't like them and you know they don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to come across that way. When he talks, he doesn't know how to smile and talk at the same time.
Right.
Everything is so serious and so deep and so dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and it doesn't help him that, and I know this kind of sounds shallow to even talk about, but he has a very weaselly little voice. He doesn't have a powerful voice. You know? Yeah.
No, he doesn't know how to take control of a room. He doesn't have the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. And that is a problem for Biden. He never had delivery.
Yeah.
Okay, he delivers okay
mm-hmm.
most of the time. But it's nothing rousing about him. I agree
right.
with that. So it will be very interesting. I think it's fair that we mention that Mr. Trump and his immediate cronies are in trouble. Fannie Willis says that she's going to try all 19 defendants in the case at the same time. That's not going to happen because at least half of them will enter into plea agreements for probation, and that will end. However, there are people I know, if she had to divide the case up, the following would be the first ones to go to trial. Trump, Meadows, Powell, Giuliani, Eastman, Clark, and Ellis. Now, I talked to a lawyer yesterday. I told you I hired a lawyer down in North Carolina to represent me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him. And he's a Cooley grad. And he worked in a law firm in Asheville with Jenna Ellis, who is the last person I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And he told me that she is walking around telling everybody how pissed off she is, that she has not received a dime in help for attorney's fees from Donald Trump. I predict she's the first of that group to fall. I think Jeffrey Clark will fall. I think Rudy Giuliani, if he stays sane long enough, will fall. This guy's on the verge of a complete mental and physical breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
He owes millions of dollars. He has no money. And he also is not getting any help from Donald Trump. Sidney Powell will fall because she can't afford the attorney's fees either. Meadows got a book out. People read it. He's got some money. He can afford attorney's fees. But that will be the first group to go to trial. And the others will fall to plea agreements to testify against all of them. So she's not going to trial with 19 defendants. Going to trial with maximum 8 or 7 or 8 in the first trial. So, but I want to mention that there are two people who were named as, one of them named as an unindicted co-conspirator. And these are Georgia's lieutenant governor and a state
yeah.
senator who are in terrible, terrible trouble right now. Okay? They're looking at losing their jobs or at least being suspended from them. Brian Kemp, or I think, is that his name? The governor, is it Brian Kemp?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay. He can suspend them based if they get indicted, and apparently now there's a special prosecutor been appointed in regards to Burt Jones because Fannie Willis gave money to his opponent, and so it was declared that she had a conflict of interest and could not indict him. There's a special prosecutor that's going to be appointed. He's going to get indicted. And so is a guy named Sean Still, who is a state senator, who is a fake elector.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are going to be indicted in a separate indictment. They'll be charged with forgery, false statements, impersonating a public officer. Those will be the charges that will be filed against them, for which they are now unindicted co-conspirators. These guys are hangers-on who are going to lose their jobs. Watch this space, as Rachel Maddow likes to say.
Right.
Okay? Watch this space because it's going to happen. They're going to get indicted.
Mm-hmm.
And watch them roll over because their careers are over. So they might as well take Donald down in the process.
Well, speaking
yeah,
of lieutenant governors of Georgia, we should mention the previous lieutenant governor of Georgia, Duncan.
Duncan?
Yeah, who Trump explicitly told not to testify. Trump, again, on his Truth Social, so-called, tweeted that Duncan was going to testify and then said, and you shouldn't. So,
well, I don't think
once
he said
again,
you shouldn't. I thought he said, don't testify. Those
yeah,
words.
Well, yeah.
I may be wrong.
Well,
I may be wrong. But I thought that's what I thought
yeah.
that's what he said.
Either way, it's the same import. Once again, you know, courts are treading carefully here, but Trump is already getting away, and he's going to keep on pushing until he finally finds where the line is.
There is no question he's going to push it.
Yeah.
He's going to push the line.
Yeah, right. You know, actually telling somebody not to testify who's under subpoena in front of a grand jury will land most defendants in jail. Trump still walks free, so we'll see. And that, now he's joking about fleeing the country. So we'll see where the line is. I don't know where it is. If you would have thought that he crossed it some time ago. But apparently not. So I just wanted to mention, as long as we're talking about lieutenant governors, the last lieutenant governor of Georgia, he's actually threatened. I say it every week, right? If this was a manuscript for a fiction novel, no publisher would buy it. It's absolutely unbelievable that we're in the situation that we're in right now.
You know what, and I think I've said this before, that the novels by, what's his name, who wrote the Jack Ryan novels? I forgot his name.
Tom Clancy, is that it?
Yeah, Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
Every single one of those novels foretells actions that could happen and actually did happen. He might have had the perpetrators wrong, but he foretold these things. And he told, and he basically outlined how they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in one of his last novels involving Jack Ryan called Debt of Honor, it's about a Japanese guy who's really upset with the American government, and he's a billionaire, and he hijacks a 747. Takes over a 747, doesn't hijack. There's nobody else on the plane but him. And he takes a 747 that he either owns or has access to, flies it across the ocean, and flies it into the Capitol during the State of the Union address.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Jack Ryan ends up becoming president of the United States.
Right.
Now, who used that idea? Who would ever think of doing mm-hmm. something like that? Osama
right.
bin Laden read the book.
Mm-hmm.
He read the book. Oh, this is how we do it. Everything he wrote about was real. All of the technology was real. So, yeah, I think if Clancy thought about it, this is a scenario he could come up with.
It would take a lot of creative energy to conjure this up. But, yeah, maybe he'd be the guy.
It would.
Yeah. Yeah.
But seriously, I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am.
Yeah. Didn't our intelligence agencies actually approach Tom Clancy at one point when he was still alive?
Yes.
And
what are you writing about now?
Yeah, what if you wanted to destroy the United States, how would you do it? Because apparently you're pretty good at right.
How would
right.
you do it? You know how to yeah. beat us up. You know how we beat up people in South America. We know how, you know, we know how there's a possibility you could come up that a lost bomb could be used against us. You thought about all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What else you got in your bag of tricks?
Yeah, right. Right, right.
And who are you really working for?
Yeah, right.
Seriously.
Yeah, right.
You know, I got a feeling that's the case. We almost got into Hunter Biden's plea agreement, but we can talk about that anytime we want to, because that's going to be around for the next God knows how many
yeah.
months. But the last thing I really wanted to mention was the decision of the Fifth Circuit in regards to Matthew Kaczmarek's ruling as a district judge down in Texas, finding
mm-hmm.
that somehow the Food and Drug Administration was wrong
right.
in approving mifepristone. And this three-judge panel basically agreed that the FDA had failed to account for safety concerns when it made it so easily accessible in 2016. In other words, you could get it by mail.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than have to go to a doctor's office, which, of course, they think is at least a step towards outlawing the use of mifepristone in states where, in fact, abortion is outlawed.
Right.
Legislatures will just say you can't use mifepristone either. And so people will have to leave the state in order to get mifepristone. During this litigation, Kaczmarek gave them a five-day stay. The Fifth Circuit granted the stay sort of half granted it and changed and took things that they didn't like out of the decision and said these things are stayed. Fortunately, the United States Supreme Court issued a full stay. The Fifth Circuit ruled in favor of Kaczmarek's opinion to a great degree, but didn't have a choice. The stay had to stay in place because they can't overturn the United States Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So to the United States Supreme Court we go with mifepristone. I have to assume that the petition for a writ of cert will be filed rather shortly. I don't even think they'll wait for a reply. They'll grant cert. And it'll get argued sometime early in the term, beginning in October.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. They'll move rather quickly with it. It will be
yeah.
interesting to see whether they are prepared to accept fact findings, like was made in this case, that overturns 20 years of nothing but proof that they were right. Okay. And go back and throw out mifepristone's approval. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll tell you what I said. I hate to say this, but, you know, I got my computer on when I'm here. They're showing film from an FAA hearing where a Southeast Airlines plane was taking off while another one was almost ready to land on top of it.
Yikes.
That's on video. And the other plane pulled up and went around. But if they had landed, they would have landed right on top of the plane that was moving to take off.
Wow.
Scares me. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt what you were talking about. But
no.
That was scary. I'm a pilot. And that's I'm scared to watch that stuff.
Yeah.
Where are you
seeing that?
So,
check that out.
It was on MSNBC. Yeah, it was on
okay.
MSNBC.
Yeah.
You know, I watch live TV while we're on, you know, to see if anything happens that is worth noting.
Right.
That's all. So that happened to come on just as I was talking. Wow. Sorry about that. I got distracted. I digress.
Yeah.
I
digest.
So, I digest all of this stuff. Our time is up, but I do want to say something to everybody. Do not pay attention to the NBC Des Moines Register opinion poll, because you have to look underneath the numbers, and the numbers underneath tell you that Trump's support is much softer than one would think it is. Forget the headline numbers. The answers they got from people are so contradictory, these people don't know what to think. So I just do yourself a favor. Look at the numbers underneath. We can talk about that next week.
Yep. Yep.
So there you go.
Yep. Well, another hour went by fast.
Right? You're having dinner with the boss tonight?
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
And then, thank you. And then tomorrow night I'll be watching the. This would be the first time in years that I've actually watched Fox. But I'm going to check out the debate tomorrow night, see how that goes too. So we can talk about that next week as well.
In and out. I don't want to watch the whole thing. I'm going to be in
right.
and out. And honestly.
Yeah.
You know what you really need to know, you're going to find in the snippets afterwards, and you can watch MSNBC or CNN or you know, some other network, News Nation or whatever you're going to watch. You don't have to watch Fox to get that, because you're going to get the pro-Trump version of what people were saying.
Yeah. Right.
That's what I think you're going to get. So you're not going to get much Chris Christie on that network. So we'll see what happens. Hezzy, thank you for your hour again.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Hezzy. Have a great week.
You can interrupt and jump in anytime you want to. You know that, right?
I'm captivated about what you guys have to say, and I think you're more important than I am. So that's the bottom line.
You're a captive audience. How's that?
Yeah, right.
Well,
right.
That's fine by me. We're better to be captured by excellence.
Right.
Gentlemen, have a good day. All the best.
Yep,
speak
you as well.
Next
have
week.
A great week.
Have a great day, Hezzy. Brendan, take care. I'll talk
both
to you.
Both of you.
You
give my
well.
Best
yep.
to Marilyn. I hope she recuperates. Be good.
Yeah. You heard that, Marilyn.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Be well, guys. Bye. Well, doesn't get better than Brendan Beery and Jeffrey Swartz, Cooley Law School professors, both of them, and look forward to hearing them every week on Tuesday, except last week when all kinds of disasters with Blog Talk Radio. So that was the story. Well, evidently City and State New York came up with a fantastic, synopsis of the most powerful people in the county, which I thought was really terrific. They call it the 2023 Westchester 100, suburban county's most influential leaders. And so it starts off where the introduction is winding bucolic roads, scenic views of the Hudson River, manicured suburban yards, and the hustle and bustle of White Plains, Yonkers, and New Rochelle are all images that come to mind when people think of Westchester County. Behind all of those images are the people who make this million-person county thrive. So business is booming across Westchester, especially in the technology and life sciences sectors. Westchester has a host of prominent healthcare institutions, an active nonprofit scene, and a number of high-ranking colleges and universities. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, one of Albany's three people in a room, calls Westchester home, as do many other influential legislators. And one of the most competitive congressional districts in the nation includes a portion of the county, and a neighboring district could register a rare congressional primary involving an incumbent. The Westchester residents are leading prominent national groups and top businesses have their best and brightest headquarters in the county. And these are the remarkable leaders empowering Westchester. So we start off with Andrea Stewart Cousins, the state Senate majority leader. Well, numerous Westchester elected officials bemoan Governor Kathy Hochul's sweeping housing proposals, which would have required New York City's suburbs to speed up the building of new homes. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins held firm in negotiations with the governor, putting the ambitious housing plan on hold. And that's not the only time this year the Yonkers Democrat has stood up to Hochul as she played a key role in blocking the governor's nominee for state chief judge. Then number two is George Latimer, Westchester County Executive. Westchester County Executive George Latimer has mulled over running for higher office before, and now the Democrat is eyeing a seat in Congress. Local politicos have nudged him to primary Representative Jamal Bowman, in part because of frustration surrounding Bowman's critical views of Israel. While it's unclear whether Latimer will challenge the incumbent, he does have a strong campaign record and local support that could boost his odds. Latimer has spent decades in office in the state Senate, Assembly, and Westchester County Board of Legislators. Number three is Mayor Mike Spano. Who knows when Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano's reign might end? The Yonkers mayor handily won the primary election for his fourth term in office and will be the city's longest-serving mayor, assuming he wins again in November. His longevity in office can be credited to the Yonkers City Council, which has voted to extend term limits in office twice for Mayor Mike Spano. But his latest primary challengers brought new scrutiny and attention to Spano, who faced criticism for keeping at least 14 relatives on the city's payroll. Number four is Amy Paulin, the assembly member. Assembly member Amy Paulin hit the ground running this year. She took over as chair of the Assembly Health Committee, which was previously led by former assembly member Richard Gottfried for 35 years. She's been busy putting health at the forefront of the state's deliberations, advancing a bill to make the birth control pill easier to access, and pushing for her medical aid in dying legislation. In fact, the Scarsdale Democrat is a state lawmaker who has passed the most bills during the 2023 legislative session, and she also helped stall a housing agenda from the governor that could have reshaped the suburban community she represents. Then we have Jamal Talia Fernandez, Pete Harcum, and Shelley Mayer, state senators. Well, State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins isn't the only Westchester lawmaker who's got clout in the chamber. State Senate Shelley Mayer of Yonkers chairs the Influential Education Committee, which is perennially in the thick of battles over school funding and high-profile policy debates. This year, the budget included a record $34.5 billion in total school aid, while a compromise was reached that allows some dormant, quote, zombie, end quote, charters to be revived in New York City. State Senator Pete Harcum of South Salem this year took over as chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee. A key accomplishment was passing legislation protecting wetlands, one of eight bills he sponsored in his committee that passed both houses. State Senator Jamal Bailey is better known for his role in the Bronx, where he chairs the county's Democratic Party, but his district also includes Mount Vernon. Similarly, first-term State Senator Natalia Fernandez represents both the northern Bronx and a portion of southeast Westchester County. Then we have number six with Jamal Bowman, a member of Congress. Representative Jamal Bowman doesn't shy away from conflict. The former school principal has gone viral for denouncing gun violence and standoffs with Republicans and joined fellow progressives in boycotting Israeli President Isaac Herzog's address to Congress in July. Some observers have speculated that the progressive politician could mount a strong challenge against New York City Mayor Eric Adams, but Bowman has said he isn't interested. Primary standoff may be headed his way regardless, as rumors suggest that Westchester County Executive George Latimer may challenge him. Then we have Mike Lawler, who's a member of Congress. Representative Mike Lawler is a top Democratic target nationally after topping then-Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee Chair Sean Patrick Maloney in 2022. Just don't tell President Joe Biden, who offered words of praise for the first-term Republican, as he has taken pains to walk a centrist tightrope while keeping himself in the headlines. Lawler, who is now considered one of the most vulnerable House incumbents, has said the GOP needs to move on from former President Donald Trump. Lawler, whose Hudson Valley district includes part of Westchester, previously served in the Assembly, where he was a prolific lawmaker serving in the minority, and he has been similarly proactive in introducing legislation in Washington, D.C. Then we have Mimi Rocha at number 8. She's the Westchester County District Attorney. When Mimi Rocha ran for Westchester County District Attorney in 2020, she vowed to shed light on alleged police corruption and abuse in Mount Vernon. 2 years after entering office, she concluded investigations that uncovered questionable police and prosecutorial conduct and vacated 26 people's past convictions. However, she won't be adding to the list of indictments against former President Donald Trump. In June, Rocha wrapped up a high-profile investigation regarding Trump's local golf course without bringing forward any charges. Number 9 are both Marsha Gordon and John Ravitz. She's president and CEO, executive vice president, and chief operating officer, Business Council of Westchester. So it begins as this. The Business Council of Westchester had an array of legislative priorities in Albany this year that included opposing antitrust legislation, minimum wage raises, and a bill requiring newly constructed buildings to be all electric. The group also backed the state's new Clean Slate Act and the governor's controversial housing proposals. Marsha Gordon and John Ravitz remain among the most influential advocates for businesses across the county, representing more than 1,000 corporations, hospitals, nonprofits, and other members. Then we have in 10th place, Chris Burdick, Dana Levenberg, Stephen Otis, J. Gary Pretlow, Nader Sayers, Mary Jane Shimsky, and Matt Slater. Well, Assembly Member J. Gary Pretlow is one of the most senior members of the chamber, serving there since 1992. He chairs the Racing and Wagering Committee and pushed for awarding 3 downstate casino licenses, which could benefit Westchester's Empire State Casino by MGM Resorts. And Assembly Member Stephen Otis, who first took office in 2013, chairs the Science and Technology Committee and has spearheaded a state digital inclusion grant program. Then we have Assembly Member Nader Sayers, who was elected in 2018, was appointed chair of the Students with Special Needs Subcommittee after an extensive career in education, including stints as a teacher, principal, and president of the Yonkers Board of Education. He recently passed legislation to help increase diversity in the teaching profession and helped secure a record $406 million in state support for Yonkers Public Schools. Assembly Member Chris Burdick, a former Bedford supervisor who was elected to the state legislature in 2020, chairs the Employment Opportunities for People with Disabilities Subcommittee and is committed to addressing climate change. 3 other local assembly members took office this year, Mary Jane Shimsky, Dana Levenberg, and Matt Slater. Shimsky, who served on the Westchester County Board of Legislators, turned heads by knocking out incumbent Thomas Abinanti in a Democratic primary and sponsored legislation this year on a STAR, Taxpayer Bill of Rights, and Village Incorporation Reform. In a more peaceful transition, Levenberg succeeded Sandy Galiff, her former boss, and used her legislative background to pass the most prime-sponsored legislation through both chambers of any first-term legislator, including legislation to ban radioactive wastewater runoffs into the Hudson River from Indian Point Energy Center, which was signed by Governor Kathy Hochul, the only Republican of the bunch is Slater, an ally of Representative Michael Lawler, who served as executive director of the New Hampshire Republican State Committee and chief of state to then State Senator Terrence Murphy, where he focused on cutting spending and property taxes. Number 11 is Ed Domingo. He's the senior vice president and general manager, Empire City Casino by MGM Resorts. The rush to snag a full casino license in downstate New York has heated up here with buzzy proposals cropping up around Times Square and Hudson Yards in Manhattan. But Ed Domingo is betting on Empire City Casino's odds. If it gets a full-fledged license, the Yonkers Casino has planned to spend $850 million to bring live table games, restaurants, and an entertainment center. Plenty of Westchester's most influential leaders are backing its bid as well, optimistic about its potential to bring in jobs and revenue to the county. Then we have in number 12th place, Leonard Schleifer, co-founder, president, and CEO of Regeneron. Dr. Leonard Schleifer's Regeneron has seen revenue jump by 7% so far this year, fueled in part by booming sales of drugs treating a rare cholesterol disorder, cardiovascular disease, and other conditions. The pharmaceutical company has also benefited from partnering with drug maker Sanofi, who recently jointly released a study with promising indications their drug could treat patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. The drug could draw in billions of dollars, some of which could go to supporting Regeneron's continued $1.8 billion expansion in Westchester County. In 13th place is Catherine Rinaldi. She's president of the Metro North Railroad. After commuter railroads were hit hard during the COVID-19 pandemic, things are looking up for the Metro North Railroad. It has seen steady increases in ridership and hit a post-pandemic ridership record in June as 224,371 passengers boarded its trains. Catherine Rinaldi has also had to navigate other challenges, such as historic flooding following storms in the Hudson Valley. Crews sprung into action to restore lines to service and man temporary bus service. Rinaldi also serves as interim president of the Long Island Railroad, which allows for closer collaboration. In 14th place is Arvind Krishna. He's the chair and CEO of IBM. One of the largest employers based out of Westchester, IBM's history and the counties are intertwined. Arvind Krishna is the newest chapter in the connection, becoming CEO in 2020 and chair in 2021. Krishna is pushing for the Hudson Valley to become the next Silicon Valley, which President Joe Biden echoed in Poughkeepsie last year when he said the region could be the epicenter of quantum computing. Last year, Krishna was named to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's board of directors. Then we have in 15th place Thomas Roach, White Plains mayor. While other cities across New York State are pushing back against housing newly arriving migrants, White Plains Mayor Thomas Roach is taking a different approach. He has worked with New York City government to house asylum seekers and planned ways to connect them to city services. Roach, who has also overseen continued development in White Plains, is also one of the several local elected officials who backed Governor Kathy Hochul's housing proposal earlier this year. In 16th place is Vedat Gashi, who is the chair of the Westchester County Board of Legislators. Vedat Gashi generated support for his primary bid to unseat Representative Jamal Bowman last year, drawing endorsements from former Representatives Elliot Engel, Anita Lowy, and other local officials. When his campaign fell short, he drove back into county politics. Gashi, a political refugee from Kosovo, became chair of the Westchester County Board of Legislators in May, the first person of Albanian American descent and Muslim faith to hold the role. On his watch, the county has expanded services while balancing the budget. Then in 17th place, we have Ken Jenkins, Westchester Deputy County Executive. Westchester Deputy County Executive Ken Jenkins has had a busy year. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins selected the local government veteran to chair the state's redistricting commission last year. That left Jenkins in the vital position of managing a new draft map of the state's assembly districts while also juggling his responsibilities in Westchester government. So Jenkins has extensive experience in county government, having previously served as chair of the Westchester County Board of Legislators. Then we have Sean Patterson Howard and Darren Morton. She is the Mount Vernon mayor. He, Mount Vernon comptroller. Well, Mount Vernon mayor Sean Patterson Howard has made history twice. In 2019, she became the first woman elected to serve as mayor of Mount Vernon. This year, she became the city's first mayor in 20 years to actually be reelected for another term, a sign of stability in what has been politically a volatile city. She was also sworn in this year as the president of the African American Mayors Association. Mount Vernon City Comptroller Darren Morton has also played a role in the functional city government improving transparency on Mount Vernon's finances in an effort to tackle the city's debt. In 19th place, we have Noam Bramson, who is the New Rochelle mayor. Noam Bramson's 18 years tenure as mayor of New Rochelle is coming to an end. His time in office is ending on a rocky note after an ethics panel found he violated the city charter in seeking to serve as the city's economic development commissioner. But he's also looking forward to a new role as executive director of Sustainable Westchester, a Mount Kisco-based nonprofit pushing for municipalities to shift to green energy and reduce waste. In 20th place, we have Mondaire Jones, Liz Whitmer Geraghty, and Marianne Carr. These are congressional candidates. The three Democratic candidates vying to take on Republican Representative Mike Wohler could not have come from more different areas of Westchester politics. Mondaire Jones previously represented Westchester in Congress for a term, though redistricting and a rival Democrat pushed him out and prompted him to mount an unsuccessful bid for a House seat in New York City. Liz Whitmer Geraghty has had a more low-profile political career serving on the Katona-Lewisboro Board of Education for the past 4 years. Her largest political connection comes from her sister, the rising Democratic star, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Marianne Carr has spent the longest time in government, sitting on the Bedford Town Council since 2016, although she lacks the name recognition of her rivals. Then in 21st place, we have Nick Spano, who's the founder and president of Empire Strategic Planning. Empire Strategic Planning ranks among the most highly compensated lobbying outfits in New York, having worked with such notable clients as the Greater New York Hospital Association, the Capelli Organization, Standard Amusements, LLC, the Westchester County Police Benevolence Association, and the Yonkers Police Benevolence Association. The firm is headed by Nick Spano, a former state lawmaker who's part of the well-known political family, as one of his brothers is Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano. In 22nd position, we have Lakeisha Collins Bellamy, President of the Yonkers City Council. Yonkers City Council President Lakeisha Bellamy. Collins Bellamy has kept busy ever since she became the first Black woman to serve in the council's top role last year. She cast a deciding vote that extended term limits, a major boon for Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano, and passed a budget that gave a significant boost in funds to education. Collins Bellamy is a lifelong Yonkers resident with experience working as an attorney and serving on the Yonkers Board of Education. In 23rd position, we have Joan McDonald, Andrew Ferris, and Terrence Rayner. Director, she's a director of operations. He's chief of staff, acting public safety commissioner in Westchester County. These public officials play key roles in shaping Westchester's future. As director of operations, Joan McDonald oversees all counties of the county's department and its 4,500 employees. The former state transportation commissioner also chairs the county's industrial development agency, steering financial incentives to major residential and commercial developments. Meanwhile, Terrence Rayner has served as the county's public safety commissioner since last year, bringing experience as the former head of the Mount Vernon Police Department, and Andrew Ferris, a key confidant to County Executive George Latimer, has kept busy tracking policy developments on his behalf. In 24th position is Michael Israel, who is the president and CEO of Westchester County Medical Center. With Michael Israel as its president and CEO, Westchester Medical Center has put a special focus on its patients' recovery. Just 5 months after long COVID-19 was first coined, the Westchester Medical Center Health Network launched the post-COVID-19 recovery program. In June of 2021, the hospital program received two grants totaling $35,000, and this year Israel oversaw the launch of the medical center's branch of the Trauma Survivors Network and a new center for women's health equity, which was funded by a $750,000 state grant. In 25th position is Suzanne Berger, who is the chair of the Westchester County Democratic Committee. Representative Mike Waller's Northern Westchester seat is a top target for the National Democratic Party. And Suzanne Berger, the chair of the county's Democratic Party, is in the middle of the effort to flip Berger, along with Rockland and Putnam's Democratic chairs, endorsed former Representative Mondaire Jones when he entered the race in early July. First woman to lead the county party, she helped Governor Kathy Hochul secure a full term and is working to maintain a supermajority in the Westchester County Board of Legislators this fall. Outside of politics, the Dobbs Ferry resident is also a counsel for law firm Brian Cave Leighton Paisner. And we also have Susan Fox, president and CEO of White Plains Hospital, 26th position. As White Plains Hospital has expanded, its top executive, Susan Fox, hasn't rested on her laurels. In 2021, the hospital opened a new $272 million Center for Advanced Medicine and Surgery, as well as a lab this year to expedite lab diagnosis times. In March, the hospital announced plans to construct a new inpatient building as well. Early in 2023, Fox joined the Board of Commissioners for the Joint Commission, a nonprofit organization which accredits health care programs across the United States. In 27th position, we have Ross Pepe, who is the president and construction of the Industry Council of Westchester and Hudson Valley. Massive amounts of infrastructure funding are still being funneled into the Hudson Valley, spurring construction projects, improving the region's highways, roads, bridges, and tunnels. The Construction Industry Council of Westchester and Hudson Valley, headed by Ross Pepe, is well positioned to help its more than 600 members take advantage of the contracting opportunities. The organization has spent much of the past year highlighting gaps in infrastructure support throughout the Hudson Valley. In 28th position is Shannon Powell, co-founder of Indivisible Westchester. If Democrats want to flip the House of Representatives, they'll have to flip a series of seats in New York first. Shannon Powell, co-founder of Indivisible Westchester, is helping launch a new political action committee, No Surrender New York, for that exact reason. Looking to oust Representative Mike Waller, Indivisible quickly put its support behind former Representative Mondaire Jones. The organization has also loudly opposed the Democratic nomination of Charles Wood, who won his first term on the state Supreme Court on the Republican Party line. And then we have Ramon LaGuarta, chair and CEO of PepsiCo Inc., in 29th position. Ramon LaGuarta isn't just making soda at PepsiCo, but snacks, sports drinks, bottled water, and oatmeal. The food and drug giant has consolidated its operations at its longtime purchase headquarters in recent years, closing other offices in the county. Former company offices in White Plains have been sold to become medical offices, and former offices in Somers were told to become a co-working environment. Earlier this year, PepsiCo secured a new contract with its security officer union and hosted a major conservation fundraiser in its sculpted garden. Well, we're going to end with position 30 with Christine Nicholas and George Lentz. CEO and President Nicholas and Lentz Communications. Arts institutions, real estate developers, and universities number among the many clients that have turned to Christine Nicholas and George Lentz over the years. The duo bring to these clients expertise in media relations, government affairs, and crisis management. Nicholas spent years overseeing press operations for New York City government, while Lentz held top roles handling public affairs and legal issues at organizations such as NYC and Company, now New York City Tourism and Plus Conventions, and the Partnership for New York City. And that's it. So that's where we are. It's 11:30 our time. I'm going to conclude for the day because I've got to get to the hospital today for some testing. And that's the story. So we'll speak to you soon. Take care and all the best. Goodbye.